Happy Tuesday evening, everyone. This is Pam Stack, your host, and you're listening to Authors on the Air. We're proud to be part of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. Tonight, I have a very special friend with me. She has won so many awards that when I listed them on my Facebook page, author friends were writing in that they had award envy. Allison Brennan is with me tonight for book launch for her newest book, Make Them Pay. It's going to be fun talking to her, so don't go away. We'll get started right now. Much for being with me tonight on Tuesday with this very special edition. If not for the fact that I love Allison Brennan so much, not only as a writer, but she's my friend too. I would be reading, except that this is too important. Allison just released her next book in the Lucy Kincaid series, and this is a special one. It's called Make Them Pay. But for those of you living under a rock, I'll go ahead and enlighten you about my friend Allison. I love going and looking at her website because it gets changed all the time with whatever she's doing. So this is what she says. Allison Brennan believes life is too short to be bored, so she had five children and writes three books a year. Now, she had the five children first. I want to just say she's not doing that every couple of years. You know, she's done with that nonsense. Got it out of the way. Right, Allie? Right? I'm right about that, aren't I?
I'm
okay.
Done. I'm
so
done.
You're not adopting anymore. You're not birthing any more babies or anything like that. So,
nope.
But Allison also, interestingly enough, was a former consultant to the California State Legislature. So she's also now a New York Times and USA bestselling author of more than two dozen thrillers and numerous short stories. She is called the master of suspense, and RT Book Review said her books are mesmerizing and complex. As I said, she's received multiple awards. I posted them on my Facebook page. You can go and look at them at 4 Pam Stack. Friends are writing in saying, I have award envy. I'm so jelly. I want to be Allison. And I'm thinking, but there's nobody like Allison but Allison Brennan. Welcome back to Authors on the Air, Allison.
Thank you, Pam. I'm just so thrilled to be here. And it's always great to talk to you.
Thank you. I miss seeing you. This time last year, you were in my neck of the woods, if you recall.
I know.
Where we met in the ladies' room and proceeded to sit down, block the doors, and have a conversation.
Hey,
so,
you know, wherever we can get it.
I know. I'm telling you. Well, you know, it turns out that probably was the only space that had seats, and we could relax for a few minutes. And what we're talking about is Southwest Readers Fest here in Southwest Florida, which is due to happen in two more weeks, so I'm really excited about that. But I miss you not being here. It was so fun to see you again. Congratulations on your release today of Make Them Pay, which is a really critical turning point in the Lucy Kincaid novels. Let's talk about Lucy, first of all. You've been writing her for a little while now. She's not a new character, and we're kind of comfortable being around Lucy because she's so sharp, but she always has a new adventure going on. And
well, yeah, she has to.
She has to have all these great adventures. Let's talk about where Lucy Kincaid started. Tell us about how she got birthed, speaking of babies.
Way back in 2007, I released a trilogy. It was my No Evil trilogy, and originally it was about the Kincaid family. And they were this big Irish-Cuban family, and they were based in San Diego, and I just loved them. Well, Lucy was 18 at the time, and so the first two books, well, actually all three of the books were about her brothers and sisters, But in the third book, she was kidnapped, and it was called Fear No Evil. And the book was mostly about her brother, a forensic psychiatrist. And Lucy was kidnapped and raped live on the internet. And it was one of those pivotal moments. As soon as I was done writing the book, I said, oh my gosh, she has to have her own series. I mean, I was just so invested with her as a character. But I had other books was contracted to write first. So I kind of put it in the back of my mind. And then when I was going up to contract years later, I said, I really want to write a series about Lucy. I'm going to age her a little bit, because to be in the FBI, you have to be 25. So I was going to age her a little bit. And what I really wanted to explore with her was what happens as a rookie, like getting into the FBI, training through the FBI, being a rookie agent. There's so many books out there about seasoned cops, about experienced FBI agents. I wanted to kind of go from the beginning. So that's why I even had one of the books took place at Quantico, where there was actually a murder there, and I got to tour it, and that was so much fun. And so that's kind of how Lucy started. And when she became a full-fledged agent, it wasn't until book 7, and she was by book 8, she was in San Antonio, Texas.
Well, so this kind of starts a new chapter, and we hope in Lucy's life. We don't know for sure, but she and Sean are hopefully going to get married. Everything's been leading up to this, and I'm really excited to finish reading this book. I don't suppose you want to give away any clues or anything, yeah? No.
Well, I don't want to give anything away, but I will say this. When I first started writing the Lucy Kincaid series, I wrote it sort of as a romantic suspense. I'd given my readers a story promise that whatever love interest Lucy had wouldn't be killed. I wouldn't kill him off. So Sean and Lucy are going to definitely stay together. That was a story promise I made early on. Everybody else knows promises. But Sean and Lucy are going to definitely persevere through anything that life hands them.
Well, I love that. I love knowing that. So that's kind of like a little tease right there. Not to say that the road up the aisle is going to be easy, because nothing by halves for your characters. But you said something interesting that I want to kind of talk about, if you don't mind. You said you promised your readers that you wouldn't kill off Lucy or Sean. You know, I know that writers write because they have to write. And besides just the craft of putting together a book, you creative types must write, the way painters must paint and musicians must compose. Is it a fine line between satisfying that creative portion of you and also giving your readers what they really want to read? Because you used to have a paranormal series that I adored. I love that paranormal. I think I have all the books, as a matter of fact. I love that paranormal series. But you had said to me one time that your readers really didn't go for that. So where's the line? I mean, is it okay to say I'm writing for my readers while I'm still getting out the need to write?
Well, first, I always write what I love to write. And I love writing crime fiction. Absolutely love it. When I wrote the paranormal series, to me, it was crime fiction. I just happened to also have demons in the story. So, so the way I viewed it, it was still a thriller. And my readers, I realized after that those books came out, there was only three, that my readers didn't like what I call the woo-woo. They didn't like the paranormal elements. And that's okay. I'm not going to say I will never write another paranormal. I actually have a futuristic kind of very light science fiction thriller that I've been working on.
Ooh,
actually,
I
wrote it back in 2004. But I'm rewriting it now just kind of on my fun time, because I still like to explore different worlds and different fun things.
Yes.
But at the same time, first, I write to make a living. I mean, this is the way I make a living, but I also write what I love. I mean, I do love writing the Lucy series, and I love writing the Max series. And I want to be able to continue writing both of them, but also have the freedom to be able to do something maybe a little different. I don't know that I'd go really far out into the paranormal world with demons and witches and dark magic again, but I think I will continue. I won't say that I will only write Lucy and Max. I think down the road I might try to do something a little bit different.
Well, I mean, let's face it, you've written a lot of different kind of books. I mean, you've written, you know, Merino and Hart with Laura and River City. So it's not like you're not used to writing a series or anything. But I think you're right. Your readers love these. I mean, they love them, no doubt. But, you know, I'm thinking about your, again, back to your paranormal, and you consider the thriller. I am a huge fan of Jim Butcher. I think I've read everything that he's put. Anything that has ink with his name on it, I've read. And I consider his Dresden Files to be paranormal thrillers because they are so suspenseful to me. You know, they're every bit as chilling as any Lucy Kincaid or any, you know, Chuck Box or any of the others that, you know, the circle of great crime writers that you're in. So I hope that you do try something like that again, and I also hope that you try a little science fiction thing too. That would be
interesting. Yeah, I know my agent will probably shoot me because he's like going, "No, don't do that to me." But the thing is, it's fun, and it was the characters, and it was the setting, and it was just, you know, it's like 100 years in the future, and they go to Mars and the moon, and I just had so much fun writing it. In fact, okay, a little trivia. So in 2004. That was when I sold my first book. So in 2003, I wrote two complete novels, The Prey, which ended up being which was a romantic suspense. And I wrote this other book that I didn't have a title for that was a futuristic, light science fiction, basically a spy thriller. I called it J.D. Robb's Eve Dallas meets Alias of Sidney Bristow. Because it was like set of picture. And so,
I love that.
Ironically, I sent out The Prey to 10 agents, the synopsis in the first three chapters, and I sent out light science fiction to two agents, and because they were both done. And well, I got the bite first on The Prey, and I had an agent that was very interested, and she signed me immediately, sold it really fast. I had already sold. And then I had a call from an agent about the light science fiction and saying that she wanted to represent it. And I'm like, well, I'm sorry, I already have a representation. So I keep thinking, well, if she had called me first, maybe that's the series I would have been writing. So it's one of those, like, weird things.
But, I mean, isn't it, as a writer, just for the deliciousness of writing, isn't it interesting to explore the different subgenres of crime fiction and so on, just storytelling in general?
Well, and I think that all my books really relate to crime and punishment, justice, everyday heroes, you know, people that are willing to risk themselves to help others. And so even it doesn't really matter what I'm writing. It's all going to kind of go into that same general world in a way.
I had posted a picture of you in the studio photo gallery of you firing a gun. Were you taking lessons someplace, or did you go to a law enforcement training center? Because I know you're a really, really diligent researcher, so you're firing a handgun.
And I will say that, you know, I've been around guns most of my life, and I'm very comfortable shooting them, but that was the FBI Citizens Academy, and I was participating in it, and it was basically one night a week for 8 weeks, and then the last day we did this gun range, and it was all FBI SWAT that came to train us, and it was so
much
fun. I know.
It was cool,
really,
right?
It was totally cool. And so I had so much fun, and I learned a lot. You know, they're very big into safety, obviously. They're very big into knowing, you know, their law enforcement officers are extremely well-trained. They have to certify with their weapon every single month. So it was Oh, yeah. They have to go and certify every single month. They don't take this, you know, they don't slack off. And
right.
So talking to them, and after I did that and graduated from the Citizens Academy, I was able to participate in SWAT training where they do these multi-jurisdictional training seminars kind of thing at an Air Force base near us. And so you would go and we'd do role playing. And so I've been a victim. I've been a hostage. I've been a bad guy. I've been shot with simulation, which is those, you know, fake rounds. And yes, it really hurts.
Right,
and
right.
It leaves bruises.
wow.
But, you know, the best part of it is, so they bring in SWAT teams from all over Northern California, is after you go through the drills, then they debrief these teams. And you get to listen to these guys and a few women where they will say, well, we did it this way because, and then they start sharing stories and, you know, they had this case or that case and this is why they approached this way. This is what they were thinking.
That's the juicy stuff, isn't it?
Absolutely.
That's the good stuff.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Because you can tell, you can talk about a hostage, somebody being taken as a hostage, but it's the stuff that you probably heard during debriefing that really makes it bloom in color, I bet.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I use I went on a ride along a couple years ago with a deputy sheriff, and he said something to me that has actually snuck into my books. And he had said the first call we had was a mother who was wanting him to arrest her 18-year-old daughter because she threw a bicycle through her window. And they were just fighting, and it was just, you know, it was a mess. It was a total domestic situation, and he didn't want to arrest her. He just needed to get her out of the house with her things, and he diffused the entire situation. He had so much patience. And we were in the car, and he said, basically, my job is a domestic counselor. And that's what he says. Most of the time.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah, yeah. You know, I'm a certified victim advocate and work for a couple of police departments, so I've been called out to a lot of domestic violence. I've been called out to a lot of homicide scenes and everything else, too. But he's right. You have to have a lot of patience, and you are a domestic counselor, because arresting isn't always appropriate. So
no,
you've learned an awful lot.
Well, I like to listen to them because, you know, they all have stories, and I always ask when I go and interview a cop, you know, why did you go into law enforcement? What drove you? And a lot of them, it's a good job. They're called to serve. They like the benefits or this or that.
Yes.
But mostly, you know, they kind of all have the same thing. They want to protect their community in a way.
No,
you know,
it's
I don't
really
know if that's
interesting.
The right word.
Yes. No,
but
no, you're right. They have a desire to serve the community that they live in.
And so, you know, and I haven't met, I mean, I know there are bad cops out there. Fortunately, most of the ones I've met, they've been really, really good men and women who just want to do the right thing. And they are driven. And my son's football coach, when he was little, he was a deputy sheriff, and his son played football, and so he wanted to give back to the school by volunteering as a coach. And, you know, and especially with young men, you know, for, mm-hmm. as they're going through puberty, having that role model there that can really help them channel maybe their anger and frustrations in the right way rather than, you know, the wrong way, having that presence was huge, I think.
Oh, how cool. Really cool. Now, I want to talk about something that's coming up with you because I think that this may be the hit of the year. I'm not sure, but I think I am. Shattered is coming August 22nd, and that is a Maxine Revere novel, but it's a crossover. This is a huge book for you, isn't it?
Yes, because it was one of those books that I wasn't sure I was going to write. I've gotten a lot of reader mail about what happened to Justin. And Justin is Lucy's nephew.
Right.
Her oldest sister had him a couple weeks after Lucy was born. And so they were kind of raised together because her sister was in law school, and so Lucy's mother raised her grandson with Lucy. He was murdered when they were 7 years old. And it was one of those things that I wrote in the very first Kincaid book as kind of the impetus that moved the Kincaid family to go into law enforcement. You know,
right.
Karina became a detective. Another brother became a cop. Another one became a psychiatrist. You know, it was kind of one of those things that we know crime touches everybody. It's not just the victims. It's their families, too.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I never expected to write his book. I didn't know what happened. It was just backstory. Well, Maxine Revere investigates cold cases. And I can't honestly say what was the impetus of it, but all of a sudden I was thinking, oh, my gosh. I had this vision in my head of Max was going to go and solve a crime. The boy kidnapped from his house in the middle of the night and murdered, not sexually assaulted. So, you know, it wasn't a sexual crime. And I was thinking, oh,
right.
my gosh, it's the same person who killed Justin. And then I realized Lucy has to solve this case. And that's when I came up with the crossover idea. So they get to work together.
This is a huge, huge, huge book for you. I like even the cover art on this more than I can tell you, because I like how you have the title of the book, and if it stays the same, I mean, it could change because it's not due out till August, but I like the cover art on it because you can tell it's a window that's been pushed up and maybe broken, and it's called Shattered. So it's really a powerful cover for what's inside between the pages here, and I can't wait to read it.
Well, I'm going to make sure you get an arc of it, too.
Thank you. Thank
I'm
you.
I'm very
Please
proud
do.
Of the book.
I imagine you are. And then if your tradition holds up, you usually publish about 3 books a year. So you still have another one in the works, maybe for the
well,
end of the year?
This year, no, not the. It's been 5 books every 2 years. So this year.
Are you on your. This is your 2 year. Two a year,
yes.
right?
This is my 2
yeah.
year, and so I have this book that came out today, the Lucy book, the Max Lucy crossover in August, and then
right.
I will have 2 Lucy books next spring. I don't
wow.
have the publication dates, but they'll be. I'll tell you just a little teaser. It's really going to focus on other characters in the Lucy world. I get a lot of
really?
Email about. J.T. Caruso, who is the one character I haven't written a lot
right.
about. So it's going to be him and his sister. And, I mean, Lucy definitely plays a big role in it, but it's really more
sure.
about J.T. and his sister. And she's she was an undercover cop. Now she works for a private group undercover. And then I'm going to have another Max book late next summer. So I'll have 3 books out next year.
Wow. When you're not writing, what are you doing?
Well, I have 5 kids.
I know.
So,
you know,
I'm not
I
writing.
Keep saying that over and over. Every time I see you, it's like, you have 5 kids. And it's like, I have 5 cats, you have 5 kids. Coincidence? I don't know. But I know. And I have 2 kids, so but they're steps. So.
Yeah, cats are a little cheaper, though.
I don't know. Mine eat that really fancy stuff. What can I tell you? They eat better than I do. the guy at the feed store tells me all the time. He says, "Pam, listen, don't worry, you'll never starve." He said, "All this cat food is made with human ingredients." And he said, "Push comes to shove, you can always eat cat food." And I said, "God, there's the scene, you know. There it is, me eating cat food on the corner there, while my cats are like licking my fingers or something. It's just so bizarre." I mean, you know me, Allison. I can't get out of the house without my dress on backwards. I just can't stoop low enough to be eating cat food. So you spend – I know you spend a lot of time with your kids and doing stuff. But you have kids in college, don't you?
I have my oldest graduated from the Fire Academy late last year. And so she's looking for a job in as a firefighter. And she works at a gym and is a CrossFit instructor, so she is definitely she's doing great. And then I have
she's badass.
One, yeah, she is total badass. Oh my gosh, she was posting some pictures of her like climbing a rope, and I'm like going, oh my gosh, I couldn't even do that when I was 16 and in
this
shape.
Is who you write about now. This is who you're writing about. A
exactly.
badass like her. I love it.
And then my other daughter is in college in Oregon, and she is she's made a double major in art and English. She got into the BFA program, but she's a little undecided about what she wants to do. But she's a junior, and she's very, very smart. And then I have three, one in high school, two in middle school, and they have sports, they have activities, you know, they're kids. They do a lot of stuff.
So it's the mom taxi service, in other words. You are the one taking them from place to place to place.
Yeah, well,
and you have to let them do all this stuff.
Yeah, my husband and I
have to do all these things. Uh-huh.
Well, like next weekend, or a week from Saturday, my son has a football camp and my daughter has a softball tournament. So Dan is doing the football camp and I'm going to do the softball tournament. And my mom is local, so she helps too.
Oh, my God. You know, here's the funny thing about that is that, you know, you want your kids to stay active and have all these things, but then, you know, you find yourself being the ferry going here and there, the mom taxi and the dad taxi, obviously, when you have conflicting schedules, and sometimes you want to say, God, can't you just stop doing all these things? But then they'd be underfoot. So it's like the yin and yang of parenthood. I understand that, you know, it's just never a happy medium there. If you had all the time in the world, what would you do if you could? What would you like to attempt that you haven't done?
Oh, gosh, you ask the hard questions. Well, I would actually love to write for television. I love TV, and
really?
I watch a lot of it. And
do you really? You know, you're talking to a girl who hasn't had a television in 10 years. So,
I gave up TV for 3 years. I gave up television for 3 years when I first
started
writing.
Because it was crappy, right?
Right,
it was crap.
Partly because I was working full-time, I had five kids, and I wanted to be published. So something had to
go.
It's
like everything's about I had five kids. I swear to God, that is like at the top of everyone's list for not, you know, adulting or doing too much adulting.
Yeah. So I gave up TV for 3 years, and that's what I did.
Wow.
I wrote instead. And when I came back to it, I am picky about my TV, but I do think TV has gotten a lot better than it used to be.
That's what I hear, yeah.
And so I do enjoy, I mean, I love The Walking Dead. I love all the DC shows like, you know, Arrow. I write an article about that for Happy
Don't
Ever
I
After.
Don't I do what you're talking about. You have to know,
I have no idea what that is.
The Walking Dead, I know that because those people always go on the horror show that's in our network that I produce,
yeah.
Thorn and Cross, Haunted Nights Live. So that those people from that show are on there, and Ghost Hunters and everything, you know, and Dexter and all. I mean, Jeff Lindsay is a friend of mine too, but, you know, he wrote Dexter and all.
Right.
So they're on the horror show. That's the show that I can't listen to. It gives me the willies. But no, I know there's great TV out there, and everybody tells me I'm a heathen for saying, you know, that I hate TV. I don't hate it. It's just that, you know, I'm the person with 500 books on my to-be-read list. And, you know, and I read so much, Allison, that I'd rather read than watch TV. Even though I know there's good stuff out there. I mean, it's fascinating. I just discovered the Red Box. I never knew what the hell the Red Box was when I would go in the grocery store. So I was so excited. I mean, I had to go and get, you know, I think I got a Star Wars film or something. The first movie I've been to in 5 years, 6 years, 7 years, I went to see Rogue One on Christmas with my besties when they came over for a visit. So, I mean,
movie.
It was a fantastic movie. And
it
then I had to get Suicide Squad. I love all that stuff. So there, see, I'm definitely immersed in the fantasy stuff. That's why I want you to write it again, because I love all that stuff. You know, we were talking earlier. You said one of your kids said to you, Mom, if you won the lottery, would you still write books? And naturally, you said,
absolutely.
Of course,
the only difference. The only difference is I probably wouldn't be quite as stressed about it, because, you know, they pay me when I finish books. And so, yeah, I'm very deadline-driven.
Right.
I think that if I won the lottery, I would probably not write more than two books a year. And I would probably maybe take a little more freedom to explore some different ideas, because I wouldn't have to write, you know, to deadline, if that makes sense. Not that I don't
mind. It does. It makes total sense. So here's kind of the follow-up to that question. If indeed continue writing when you win the lottery, how important then is it to charge for a book?
Well, I think of it this way. If I'm not charging for a book, then I'm actually screwing all the other authors out there. Because
yes, you are. And you're also invalidating yourself too, aren't you?
It's sort of like making music. I mean, if you're willing, if you love an artist and you want to support them so they can make more art, whether it's a painting or a musician, you need to pay them for that so they can continue to do it and create new works that you enjoy. And I'm not a big fan of free. I don't mind giving things away sometimes. I mean, I do contests and I'll give away books or ARCs and things like that.
Sure.
But it has to be, you know, it's usually there's a strategic method to it. When you're dealing with art, if you're saying, okay, well, my work isn't worth anything and I'm giving it away for free, that's essentially what you're saying. Well, it's not really worth anything, so here's
exactly. You've devalued it. Exactly.
And not just
what is the
me,
importance
for everybody else.
For everybody. No, I agree with you. And I think that's particularly true since we're in Women's History Month. I want to talk about particularly with women writers because I think women writers still are having a hard time pricing their books the same way as their male counterparts are. Do you feel that? Do you see that happening?
Well, because I have a publisher, they price my books the way that they price them.
It's wonderful. Yeah.
Pretty consistent across the board based, you know, I haven't seen a big gender difference in terms of the pricing of the books. I do think that women as in general don't always ask for what they deserve. I'll tell a really quick story. My husband, when I worked in the legislature, I wanted to go in and ask for a raise. And I wanted a 10% raise. And so I was telling my husband, I said, well, I want a 10% raise, and I was trying to get, you know, motivated to go and ask. And he says, so what are you going to ask for? And I said, well, I'm going to ask for a 10% raise because that's what I want. He goes, no, you're going to ask for a 20% raise.
Right, you always ask high, negotiate down.
Right, but, you know, as a woman and as, you know, working in the job I was in, I felt like, well, I deserved a 10% raise. And my husband goes, look, if you were a man, he goes, I'm not saying this. Don't get your panties in a wad. I'm not saying this because I think you're inferior. But he goes, if you were a man, you would go in there and say, I want, you know, a 20% raise because I deserve it because of A, B, and C. You don't go in there and say, oh, you know, I think I really would like a, you know, 10% raise. You know, he says, when very timid, he had been in management. So he had seen this in his role in management.
Right.
Women go in timid.
Right.
They ask for what they think that they are going to get or what they think that they deserve.
And then they settle. Right.
And they settle for less. He said,
yes.
You go in and ask for at least a 20%. So I went and asked for a 25% raise, and I got a 20% raise.
Did you really?
Uh-huh.
Good for you, girlfriend. Yes. Yes.
But that was largely because my husband motivated me, and he really made me realize that men and women treat the workforce differently, and men
they
tend to be a lot more aggressive. And
they do. In things like salary, I agree with you on that. In negotiations, they negotiate a different way. I agree with you 100%, but definitely when it comes to salary demands. And hopefully that's changing. Tomorrow, by the way, listeners, is the important for women to wear red in support of women's rights everywhere. We are still making, I hate to be political, but we're still making 77 cents to the dollar. So we're going to try to make a difference tomorrow. Everybody wears red for rocking the red for women. By the way, Allie and Abby, we're going to be wearing red tomorrow, aren't we? I'm wearing red all week this week. You know, nobody knows why. They just think I have a red thing. You know?
I guess I'll just have to dig out my red pajamas because being a writer, I don't have to get dressed.
Oh, that's a great idea. You know what? I have red jammies too. And being a radio talk show host, I don't have to either because I sit in a virtual studio. So I can sit in jammies. That works. What's next for you? We're waiting for Shattered, and then you're finishing up your books that you'll release next year. Are you going to go to any cons this year, any conferences? Are you going to take any trips? What's on your immediate bucket list?
Well, I'm going to Thriller Fest. I go every year. It's my one big conference.
Yes.
My daughter has two out-of-state tournaments, so I'm doing those softball tournaments because she plays competitive softball. So
yeah, she's really good at that, too. I see your posts on her. Yeah.
I'm also doing the StoryCon in NOLA, New Orleans, with Melissa Marr and Kelly Armstrong. We're doing
that in
September. Yep, that's all. It's gonna. If it's not on my website now, it will be on my website. It was in my newsletter.
Okay.
And so it's basically a fan conference, and it should be a lot of fun.
Those are
the only things I'm doing. Yeah.
Well, because you have five kids, so.
Well, no, I'm finishing out my books. I haven't started the books that are out next year. I haven't even started them.
Jeez. Well, you know, I have confidence in you. You're a writing machine anyway. Okay, so tell everybody where they can find you on the webs. That's really important.
Well, the easiest, everything is through my webpage, allisonbrennan.com, allisonbrennan.com. Facebook is facebook.com/AllisonBrennan. I'm on Twitter, Allison_Brennan. But again, everything, if you go to my webpage, I have links to all of my social media. I have a blog.
And it's a really nice website, too, because it's easy to get around. You can see everything. You don't have to go through like a zillion pages to get where you want to go. And each book that is released is right on the landing page. So when you hit Allison Brennan, you're going to see the new book on there right away. It's not going to be hiding from you. You'll get it right then and there. And then you can look back and see in all the other series, too. So I encourage you to go there. So are you ready to play Final Five? Five quick questions and five quick answers?
Oh, gosh, I'll try. I'm scared.
Well, we did this before now. You say that every single time. It's all about you. These are not questions that should turn your head, you know. These are really easy. Like,
okay.
If you should know them, like, you know, the five children's names real fast, okay? So you probably, when you're calling them, you throw in the cats and dogs' names, too, I'm sure.
My
dad
all
used
the time.
To do that. I swear to God, my father did it to us, too. How funny is that? Okay, whose book are you reading right now?
Oh, I just finished Echoes and Death by J.D. Robb. Just finished it.
It's a good one, isn't it?
Oh, my gosh, it's so good. It is so good. It's the 44th book of the series, and it is still so good.
Isn't that amazing? How is that possible that someone can write that many books in one series and it never gets boring, it doesn't feel dated, and the characters don't feel aged? Why is that? How does that happen?
Because she's good. I mean, that's all I can say. She is great. She's probably one of the
greatest. She's
Lenora.
She really is. She's Lenora. So,
I
you
love
know,
that series.
It's true. Yeah, I don't blame you. It's a really good one. And I like her J.D. Robb more than I like the Nora Roberts stuff. I don't know. Call me a nut for crime fiction, maybe, you think?
Well, you know, I do,
so,
too. I do like her. I really like The Obsession, which came out, I think it was last year. That was really good.
Yes.
So I try to read her big suspense novels that usually come out like in April or May or whenever. But the J.D. Robb series, I pre-order those. And it sits on my desk, and whenever I finish something, I sit down and I read it. So that's what I read this weekend. So that's why I just finished it.
Do you read books while you're writing your own?
Yes, but not as much. I'm a binge reader. So what will happen is if I'm in the middle of writing, like especially when I'm near the end of the book and I have a deadline, I won't read anything for like 2 or 3 weeks. And then I'll take a weekend and I'll read like 5 books. Because I can read.
Yeah, I do too. Yeah.
You know, I'm a binge reader.
Love it.
And
yeah.
That's kind of how it's like I'm judging the Thriller Awards, too. So that's really what I've been reading, but I can't tell you what I'm reading.
Oh, I'm so jealous.
So
I'm so jealous.
That. And I'm almost done.
There's
I'm
so many
done.
Great authors out there right now. There are so many great books, aren't there? It's just amazing to me how many great books there are. And there's, like, so little time. And I read 400 books a year, Allison, so, you
You're
know.
You're better than me. You're better than me.
But I'm not writing them. You know, that's the whole thing. I'm a very fast reader, and I consume books on the weekend like it's going out of style. So I've got a book with me all the time, no matter where I am. You know, I read because I want to talk to writers. You guys are my celebrities. Okay, let's move on. I'm going to ask you two questions.
Okay.
What's the most important thing you learned when you were in the California State Legislature? I'm serious as a heart attack. Well, let's reserve our question, our comments about elected officials, and just talk about it purely from, you know, your experience there, your positive experience. What did you take away from it?
Okay, my positive experience is that there are good and bad people on both sides of the line. That
right.
I also think I really, really learned that you don't have to agree with everybody on everything, but it's how you compose yourself, how you communicate with other people, what kind of character
yes.
you are, what kind of person you are, that matters more than whether or not you're going to agree with somebody. Because there was plenty of people that I didn't agree with that were good people. And I think that was probably the best lesson I learned, because really with, you know, all the vitriol going on, you realize uh-huh. that there still are good people who disagree with you. And there are still good
Absolutely.
People that have valid reasons. And that's really what I learned, I think, more than anything. And so that's why I actually am probably the best person to block out politics, because I kind of don't believe anything that I see anymore, because everything is so divided.
Right.
I really
right.
try to focus
I agree.
On... that I know there are good people trying to do good things on both sides of the line, and those are the people that I try to listen to, if that makes any sense.
Very good. It does. It's wonderful. You have you have five kids, and obviously one of them is taking art, so there's a creative gene flowing, you know, from you and Dan. Are any of the other kids creative, too, in their own way?
All my kids are creative in different ways. I think, you know, my number two daughter, Kelly, she is the artist, and she's immensely talented, because I can't even draw a stick figure. She's also a writer. She wants to go into publishing at some point, maybe even as an editor. So she's very talented.
God, have you tried to dissuade her from that? Just tell her, you don't want to be in publishing. She knows. She sees what you're doing, yeah.
Yeah, eighth grader, she wrote a short story. It was supposed to be short. It ended up being 9,000 words, and she got an A+. And
oh,
her teacher was, like, so excited, except for the fact that it was exceeded the word count, so she couldn't enter it in the writing contest for junior high students. She goes, how many words is this, Mary? And Mary goes, I think it's about 9,000, and the writing limit was 1,600 words.
I mean, that's like way beyond a short story. You know, we're talking way beyond a short story there. That's really great.
It was great too. It was a great little story.
Do your kids know how well known you are? Do they understand that you've won a lot of writing awards? And yes, you are. Do your kids know that you are? Really, you're very well known in the book world, and you know you are one of the top writers in the world. Let's be serious.
Well, thank you.
People know who you are. You've got tons of awards and tons of award nominations. Do they recognize that, or are you just mom?
I'm just mom. My son once asked me. He goes, "Oh, well, I told all my friends that you knew Stephen King," and I goes, "I don't know Stephen King." He goes, "Oh," like going, "What are you doing to me?" And he goes, "Well, I told all my friends
that."
I'm like going, "Oh my gosh!" But no, you know, I'm mom first. I mean, I'm the one that cooks dinner when I feel like it. I've been trying to teach them how to cook because I'm getting tired of cooking. You know, after being married for 25 years, I get really tired of it. You know,
you had five kids. It's your that's what you did to yourself. You're wedded you're wedded to the stove until the last one learns. So you better hurry up and teach them.
Yeah. Well, you know? And then my older kids, they'll send me pictures when they see my books, like at the airport or something. They'll send me pictures or post it on their Facebook page, which I think is really cute. But yeah,
They're aware, but it doesn't matter, right? It doesn't matter when it comes to time to it. It's, Mom, I've got to be at the tournament now. Can we go?
Yeah,
and that's about as far as it goes, right?
Oh, yeah, because I'm late to everything. So my kids have to try to keep me on them.
So Miss always late because of five kids and writing five books in 2 years. Dan and the kids and I are going to write a book about your life. It's going to be a fun book. We just
It'll
don't know
so
what the
boring.
Title is yet.
It's going to
no,
be
it's
so
going to be
boring.
Fun. No, it's not. It's going to be great. We're going to lie a lot. So,
Then it'll be fun.
What are we going to call it? What are we going to title this book about you?
Crazy?
We could do that. And there you go. My friend Allison Brennan, award-winning author, she is one of the heroes of crime fiction, in my humble opinion, certainly one of mine. Congratulations on the release of the new book. I'm so excited to read about Lucy's, I hope, wedding and the adventure leading up to that. And then in August, you're going to come back and tell us about Shattered, right?
Absolutely.
And I hope I get to see you in July. I don't know if I'm going or not yet. I never know. You know, I just never know. And my primary purpose for saying that is because finding a pet sitter is really difficult when you say, I have five cats, and, you know, they're thinking, oh, they're going to walk into a house. It's really, you know, horrible. It's not. But I'm like anal about keeping it, you know, fur-free and smelling pretty good. So, but it's still a challenge, and I miss my cats when I'm gone. So
I don't have built-in
babysitters. It's just me and the cats and a million books and some art. So, it is what it is. But I hope to see you in New York anyway. Thank you for coming on the show, Allison. I really enjoy having you here. You're so welcome. And let's do it again soon, okay?
Okie doke.
Okay. Have a good one. Good luck with the book. I'm going to keep my eye on it for you, okay?
Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Allison. Good night.
Good night.
And that's our show for tonight, folks. I'll be back tomorrow. I hope you have a nice evening, and thank you so much for listening. And thank you, Mom and Dad. Good night.